Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradari. Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 16, which is entitled Jai and Vijay Cursed by the Sages. Text 36. Tayor Asura Yor Adya. Tejasa yamayor hivaha. Akshiptam teja etarhi. Bhagavamstat viditsati. Tayor asura yor adya. Tejasa yamayor hivaha. Akshiptam teja etarhi. Bhagavamstat viditsati. Tayor asura yor adya. Tejasa yamayor hivaha. Akshiptam teja etarhi. Bhagavamstat viditsati. Sura Yodhadya. Bhagavam stat patit sati. Tayo. Of them, Asurayo, of the two asuras, Adya, today, Tejasa, by the prowess, Yamayo, of the twins, he, certainly, Vaha, of all of you demigods, Akshiptam, agitated, Tejaha, power, Itarhi, thus certainly, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tat, that, Viditsati, desires to do. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is the prowess of these twin asuras, demons, that has disturbed you, for it has minimized your power. There is no remedy within my power, however, for it is the Lord Himself who desires to do all this. Purport. Although Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, formerly Jai and Vijay, became asuras, the demigods of this material world could not control them, and therefore Lord Brahma said that neither he nor all the demigods could counteract the disturbance they created. They came within the material world by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he alone could counteract such disturbances. In other words, although Jai and Vijay assumed the bodies of asuras, they remained more powerful than anyone, thus proving that the Supreme Personality of Godhead desired to fight, because the fighting spirit is also within him. He is the original in everything. But when he desires to fight, he must fight with a devotee. Therefore, by his desire only were Jai and Vijay cursed by the Kumaras. The Lord ordered the gatekeepers to go down to the material world to become his enemies so that he could fight with them and his fighting desires would be satisfied by the service of his personal devotees. Brahma showed the demigods that the situation created by the darkness for which they were disturbed was the desire of the Supreme Lord. He wanted to show that even though these two attendants were coming in the forms of demons, they were very powerful, greater than the demigods, who could not control them. No one can surpass the acts of the Supreme Lord. The demigods were also advised not to try to counteract this incident, because it was ordered by the Lord. Similarly, anyone who is ordered by the Lord to perform some action in this material world, especially preaching his glories, cannot be counteracted by anyone. The will of the Lord is executed under all circumstances. Om Ajnanti Madandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Ask for your blessings. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Srila Prabhupada, Guru Parampara. May all the devotees be benefited and blessed by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam together. May Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased. Hare Krishna. So this is Canto 3, Chapter 16, entitled Jai and Vijay, Cursed by the Sages, Text 36. It is the prowess of these twin asuras, demons, that has disturbed you, for it has minimized your power. There is no remedy within my power, however, for it is the Lord Himself who desires to do all this. So these are Lord Brahma's concluding words to the demigods. The demigods approached him out of fear. The whole universe was pervaded by darkness, so the demigods were very fearful. Every living being has fear. Every conditioned soul has fear because fear is one with the false ego. The false ego thinks, I will die. And therefore, fear must be there if there's any false ego. So the demigods, even, in the higher planetary system, they're feeling fear. They couldn't control the darkness that was pervading everything. And they went to Lord Brahma to ask, what should we do? What will happen? What can be done? And Brahma, he explained the cause of this situation by going back to the story of the cursing of Jai and Vijay. So he told that whole story, and now he's concluding everything he said. His concluding thought is this. So it says, Tejasa Yamayor Hiva. The power of these two twins, Akshiptam Teja Etarhi, it certainly will diminish your power. It certainly will disturb you and diminish you, the speaking to the demigods. But you should know, why is their power greater than the demigods? Here, Bhagavams tat viditsati, because this is all ordained by the Lord. This is, it seems sometimes like a pious platitude. You know, platitude means like a saying that may be true, but it's kind of dead, because perhaps the speaker who says it has no realization, or the person who hears it in a superficial way. But you go to your Muslim friend, your Christian friend, your Hare Krishna friend, and tell them a struggle that you're going through, and if they just say, oh, it's God's will, it may not land, because there may not be realization behind it. It's just something everybody says in every religion. You go through something difficult, well, God has arranged it. It may not be powerful for us, but just imagine if you really go through some struggle, some fear, and you approach a pure devotee, and with all realization and with all compassion, they remind you, don't forget, this is God's will. God has ordained this for you. Then you may breathe a sigh of relief to remember that. Because in the mode of passion, we forget the ultimate cause of all causes, and we just get wrapped up in what's happening right before me right now. There's a chain of causation, you know. Something happens to you. You're walking. Somebody comes up to you. You recognize them. They come and slap you in the face. All right, so you may think, what was that? What is the purpose? This person, you blame the person, obviously. The person comes and slaps, and that was the cause. But then you look back, there's a cause of that. There's something that caused that. And some people in this world, even without spiritual knowledge, they may figure out that, well, that person who did that, you know, they have some mental disturbance themselves. What did they go through in life? Perhaps there's something that's there in their history, and you may therefore tolerate it a little bit more. But then a little deeper, when we have spiritual knowledge, well, even beyond that, what's caused this to happen? One can see, this is my own karma. This starts to become more difficult, because the causes, the further you go back, the more subtle the causes, and therefore we can't see it. So therefore, we just point at the first couple causes, that person. We blame people for whatever comes into our life, or some event happens, and we blame just the external circumstance. But if you go to the cause of that cause, of that cause, of that cause, all of these causes converge into the Supreme Being, God. That He is actually sanctioning everything that happens. Anything that happens, if it is not sanctioned at least by God, and even His sanction is grace. Even with our free will, if we misuse it and create all kinds of karmic reactions, by His system of karma, there's a reformation process to coming back to us. You know, you throw a boomerang, you threw it, and it comes back to you. And you have to catch it, which means accept it. You threw it after all. But a devotee thinks even more than that. They see that this is Krishna's grace in my life. Whatever His will is, it's not that God is good, like, God is, He has this goodness that He's sending forth. He is goodness. His nature has goodness, mercy. So whatever He does is for the benefit of each and every being. So that's a very deep truth, even though it sounds very simple. And if someone says it to us, it could actually disturb us, because we may be going through something and we hear that. But again, a person with realization, like Lord Brahma, imagine Srila Prabhupada coming before you, and some deep struggle is there in your life, and He says, don't forget, this is Krishna, actually. This is Krishna. There's something here for you. There's a message, there's a blessing contained within this event. Suhirdam sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the friend of all living beings. So the demigods, when they hear this, Bhagavams tat viditsati, that this is ordained by God, they're actually pacified. It's described in the next chapter, I believe the first verse. The demigods, hearing that from Lord Brahma, they actually let go of their fear and they go back to their place of residence. And even though everything is dark, and these two demons are not even born yet, all this darkness coming from, this is the power from within the womb that they're having on the whole universe. So many terrible things will happen when they're born. But the demigods, by just hearing this, Bhagavams tat viditsati, you should know it's ordained by God, their fear is pacified. And they go back. And actually the four Kumaras, they also heard the same thing. It also pacified them, because when Lord Narayan appeared, the four Kumaras, they felt a little embarrassed that they had cursed Jayan Vijay. They saw the beautiful form of the Lord and they said, "My dear Lord, we certainly are at fault for having cursed your servants. Please forgive us for that. We have cursed innocent men." And what does the Lord say? He says, "Shapo, this curse, Mayaiva Nimitas, was caused by me. I ordain this." So the four Kumaras are thinking, how foolish we are. We've cursed innocent people. And Lord Narayan's response is, "I have cursed them. I have allowed this curse. It is ordained by me." And hearing that, the four Kumaras, it is the will of the Lord. They're also pacified. And then Jai and Vijay, they also heard the same thing from the Lord. They're the ones getting cursed. They have to go to the material world. But they're also pacified when the Lord says to them, "Ma baishtam," he says, "do not fear." This is text 29. "Ma baishtam," my dear servants, "do not fear. Astusham," my blessings to you. And then he says, "Matam tu me," you should know this is approved by me. So everybody gets the same message, that this is God's will. If we can really see the connection to God, then it will allow us to actually feel some peace and some relief. This is God actually doing something. What is he doing? Let me see. It is painful. I'm going through this struggle, this hardship. There's no doubt it's painful. But the hand of God is behind this. In the conversation between Vasudev and Kamsa, and Vasudev also, very important term that's quoted often by our acharyas, this term, pritak drishya. Vasudev says, when one has this pritak drishya, this separate, seeing things as separate from God, then they become very emotional in their responses. The response to life and anything that happens. He says, shoka harsha baya dvesha loba moha madanvitaha. That if you forget that it's coming from God, if you're seeing things as separate from God, anything that's happening to you, then you will respond with shoka, lamentation, baya, fear, dvesha, hatred, loba, greed, moha, illusion, envy. All these responses will come. Because, like I said, there's a chain of causation. There's many, many links in that chain. There's a cause right in front of you, and there's a cause behind that, and a cause behind that. We just catch the first couple links, and then therefore we react very emotionally to whatever happens. But if we can take a moment, pause, become silent, and just think, the ultimate cause is Krishna. He's allowed for it. Either it's his will directly, he wants it to happen, or he sanctioned it. In either case, it's all good, because he is all good. So knowing this, we become a little more sober, also a little more willing to endure what we're going through when we see God's, we see the connection to God. We become more willing to endure it. And we can think, God is now examining my response to what's happening. God is looking at that. He's looking at the heart. When something comes upon us, how will this person respond? And we can think, God is now examining my heart. This is a name for God, actually. Pariksha Hridaya. That he's the examiner of the heart. He's examining the heart of all of us, all throughout our day. How are we responding to people? What are we thinking about? All of this is necessary for us to be able to chant the holy name purely. You know, this kind of practice in life is very necessary to be able to chant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gives his instruction to all of us. Ye rupa laila naam prema upajai tahara lakshana shuna svarup ramarai. He says, my dear Svarup Damodar, Ramananda Rai, for love to awaken in your heart, prema upajai, when you chant. We're chanting. Why is love not awakening? Why does love not arise? The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself tells us why. For that love to awaken, you have to behave and take the directions that I'm giving according to this verse. And he's about to speak a verse. If you can live and behave and respond to life with what's contained in this verse, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, prema upajai, certainly love for Krishna will awaken in your heart very quickly. Prabhupada always sometimes puts that in there. It's not in the verse, but he says very quickly it will come if you can live by this verse. And then he speaks the verse. He's speaking to, you know, he's in the Gambira, Svarup Damodar and Ramananda Rai, and his ecstasies. He's in samadhi, in devotional samadhi. And he begins to speak Shikshastakam verses. And this is his introduction to this third verse of Shikshastakam. His introduction is, unless you live by this verse, when you chant, love for God will not, it will not awaken unless you live by this verse. And he says, Trinadapi sunichena taroriva sahishnuna Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Four requirements, four teachings here by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that every devotee has to embrace in their life, whatever's happening in their life. It's described, actually, these are the natural symptoms of a pure devotee, but for a practicing devotee, they have to be practiced. So the first one, Trinadapi Sunichena. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives little, this is the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he also gives like a little commentary of each of these points. So his own commentary, he says, Trinadapi Sunichena, to be humble, more humble than a blade of grass, means that the devotee, even though a devotee is uttama, is very exalted. Anyone who's a devotee is very exalted. Grace has come. It's not our credit. But still, to become a devotee in this life is so rare. They are uttama. They are the greatest. They've been blessed. They have now an opportunity to perfect their lives. So of all the living beings, all the human beings, think of all the different creatures, all the insects and plants and birds, animals, human beings, and how many human beings are not blessed in this way, have not been blessed yet. So we don't feel any pride, we just feel gratitude. So he says, although one who's become a devotee is uttama, he thinks and feels himself lower than a blade of grass. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his comment on this point of Trinada Pi Suniche Na, he says, it says lower than the blade of grass, even lower. How can you think and feel yourself even lower than the blade of grass? He says, because blade of grass also has the ego that I am grass. So we have to go lower than that. Because there's some, the grass has not accomplished removal of the false ego. The grass thinks, I am ego. You step on the grass and you see it, when you leave, it gets back up a little bit. Back up. So even lower, because the grass is thinking. It's very natural for the grass to think that, because it doesn't have the intelligence to really do anything else. But we as human beings, we have all opportunities to remove the false ego if we really want to, by the grace of Krishna. The combination of our sincere desire and Krishna's grace, it can be removed. We're made for that, actually. We're made for that to happen. It's meant to happen. We're meant to return to Krishna. So, but instead of going in that direction towards Krishna, I see within my mind, I'm opposed to Krishna. I'm sometimes envious to others. I'm wicked in my thoughts. So I'm even less than a human being. You see that the grass can't be less than what it is, but a human being can be subhuman, can be even less than a human being. So therefore, knowing that, we should feel so humble. More humble than the blade of grass. Some people, when they feel very, very humble, following that feeling is the thought that therefore I can do nothing, and I won't even act. I'm so fallen. It's like a depression. No? Therefore, I can't do anything. But a devotee is not like that. They feel that deep, deep humility, and they think, I'm so fallen that I have to be so firm in my determination to return to Krishna because I'm so fallen. You see, this is what actually follows when it's a healthy humility, because it also can be false ego humility. It can be the humility of the false ego. Therefore, I give up. I'm so fallen, I give up. That's how we know the false ego is actually speaking when it says, I'm so fallen. But if one feels, I'm so fallen, therefore, how much should I be giving? I'm so fallen, therefore, how much should I now give to Krishna to serve? I'm so fallen that I have to catch up to all the other devotees. I'll have to give more than what they're doing. Bhakti Tirtha Swami used to think this way. In my background, I'm so fallen. I was born in this terrible ghetto under these circumstances with poverty. I'm so fallen. I've started off such a further place back than most devotees. Therefore, I have to chant more than them. I have to chant more than 16 rounds. I have to do 48 rounds because I'm starting off in a much more fallen place. So devotee, Trinada Pi Suniche Na, they feel. What is the thing here? Because a devotee is so exalted. But how is their feeling, I'm so fallen? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, I'm lower than the worm in the stool. Can you think of a more abominable creature? I'm lower than that. How can a devotee speak like that? Are they just delusion? Are they under some illusion? No, they actually know that we are all, we've separated from Krishna. And any good quality that's now there within me is by Krishna's grace. Therefore, I always remain fallen, but by His grace and His mercy, He is doing this to me. He is changing my heart. So therefore, a devotee can simultaneously feel that deep, deep humility and still be completely grateful, surrendered. This is a gift from Krishna. These qualities, these are not my qualities. Krishna's mercy upon me. So that's the first thing, humility. In this humility, we should not see it as some kind of weakness or passivity. Humility in some circumstances may be I become humble like a lamb. And in other circumstances, it may be I become like a lion. Look at Srila Prabhupada. Like a lion. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Whatever is required for service, maybe now I should be a lamb. Maybe now it's required of me that I become like a lion. Their humility is that they're completely surrendered to what Krishna wants in that moment, what the spiritual master wants. Now like a lion, now like a lamb. That's humility. Not that you just get beat up by others, become very downtrodden and beat. You just let the world beat you up because you're being so humble. You may have to take a strong position, a stand, but with humility, it can be done. Humility is a deep realization in the heart that I will serve however I can serve. Show me, Krishna, what is the direction to take here? I will do it. Even if it's outside of my nature. I was thinking of something, but I'll share that. So, Chanada Pi Sunichena. And the next teaching, Tarori Vasahishnuna, tolerance. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again gives a little commentary. He says, tolerant like a tree means tolerant in two ways. When someone comes to cut the tree, when you are provoked, when someone comes to cut you with words maybe, one should be tolerant. That means silent. There's no protesting. There's no vengeful attitude in response. There's no complaining. We complain. How many times a day do we complain? Constantly complaining. It's with our words, just speaking out, this shouldn't be. This shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't be the case. This person shouldn't have done. If someone speaks harshly to us, it's amazing. You know, it can stay with you your whole life. It shows the habit of the mind to dwell on that. And without even knowing, we're building up this tension and this resentment. It gets built up in the heart, and then we release it by complaining or by speaking harshly back. It's a release of the tension. It's not a true release. It does something for the moment. But when we dwell on something again and again, so the tree, someone is coming to provoke the tree remains silent, firm, continues to stand, and does not protest. So this is one way in which tolerance can be practiced. And also another one, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, tolerant like a tree means two things. And the second one is, even though these things are happening to the tree, a person may come and take the flowers, they may take off the branches for wood, they take the sap from trees, they take the leaves, but a tree will still continue to give. It gives those. Oh, flowers, you want these fruits? You want these flowers? You want shade? It's very hot. The tree itself is receiving the scorching rays of the sun, but gives shade to others. So we may think when we're hearing all this, this is all beyond me. It's depressing because it's beyond me. But we have to remember, these qualities come as gifts. We practice them to the best we can, and we chant the holy name, and then this becomes a natural symptom of who you are. So sometimes we think this is just not possible. But if you can catch yourself throughout the day in little moments, we have to hear again and again, because hopefully it goes in, and then we find ourselves in a situation even later today where someone may speak a little strongly or harshly, and you think of the tree. So devotee understands this. People have their natures, their conditioning. They don't take it personal. You just let it go. Krishna's examining my heart. Krishna's examining my response now. What will I do? Very difficult to remember that. Therefore, we have to hear often and try in small ways. And when the blessing comes, then it just becomes our nature to respond in that way. So, humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree. And then amani. This has to do with our identity. Amani means that no ego, no false ego, not feeling like I deserve respect. You know this, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Dattatreya has the 24 gurus. And one of his gurus, he says, is like a little child, Bala, little boy. Like Bal Krishna. One of his gurus is a little boy that he sees, this Dattatreya. He sees a little boy walking. And he learned, what did he learn from that little boy? The little boy is just carefree. You know, if someone's coming, walking up to the little boy, the little boy's not thinking, will this person respect me or disrespect me? He's just joyfully playing. And the little boy also knows that my father is protecting me. So he's carefree. So observing this boy, he understood that, first of all, he's connected to his father. He's protected. There's nothing to fear. And therefore, he's so carefree. And he's also not thinking, who will say what to me? He doesn't hold any grudges. He's not wondering as a person approaches, will they disrespect me or respect me? Will they speak kindly or unkindly? None of that is in the mind of a little child. They're just right there in the moment, and they're not considering. Once we start to consider and dwell, you know, resentment means to feel again. Resentment. It means you're feeling the same thing that happened once before again and again and again. And that's like it's a samskara. Everything that happens to us is a samskara that's implanted in the chitta, in the consciousness. But you can also empower that samskara by constantly thinking about it and dwelling on it, where it starts to control you. But if you live life letting everything go, there's still things happening, samskaras, but they don't have that kind of power. They're not charged with your thoughts. They're not charged with you re-feeling and thinking the same thing again and again. They're just experiences. Sometimes two people experience the same horrible incident, but somehow, because of the conditioning of the nature, one person just lets it go. And another person, their whole life, they're bothered by it. Why? Sometimes it's because one person is resenting it more. It is resenting the fact that it happened. But if a person is very humble and also understands truth, that everything is going on by, you know, action and reaction, karma, and people have their conditionings, and God is behind everything, that also will help you not take it too personal, not dwell on it again and again. So one person, they resent. This is a good lesson for all of us as devotees. We should not resent our problems. You may have to go through a problem, and it may be difficult, and it may bring you down, and we should associate with devotees, and we should get advice, and we should take practical steps to figure out what we need to do. But to resent the problem is like resenting God, because this is his system for our benefit. So when a person has the tendency to resent all these things that are happening to them, that's when they really get stuck. And that's when those samskaras in the consciousness, in the heart, control your life. But like a child, you see this, you see that, you let it go. Oh, what's happening now? Suddenly a child is crying, and a moment later, you just give some little toy or say something or just, oh, it's gone. But if that child had the power that we have when we get older to resent it, oh, but no, I'm not going to be happy now because you just did this. I'm going to, the rest of the day, think about what you just did. And you'll see that will become like a solid mass within the consciousness where they can't move anymore. This is how depression takes place, actually. Rethinking the same thoughts. Now, we may be born in this life already with this depression from previous lives, but it always comes in the same way. It's an experience that one starts to think again and again and feel again and again. And that's due to a very narrow consciousness, but it becomes more and more narrow as we go down that road. And it's very hard to get at. I've met people who, you know, worked as a chaplain in a psychiatric hospital in New York City for some time. I worked in a hospital, but they would also send me sometimes to a psychiatric unit. And I noted is that I'm a chaplain, you know, offering spiritual support to people in the hospital. And then the psychiatric unit, they were more eager to see the chaplain than anybody else. And they were deep people, actually, because they've gone through so much. But they were eager to, I need to talk to the chaplain, call the chaplain. No one ever requests for me to come. I used to go to the floors, it was my duty to just go one room to the next, introduce myself, and see if the person is interested in spiritual care. Some people are, some people aren't. But all the requests were coming from the psychiatric unit. I need to see the chaplain again. So I've met people, there's a whole unit of people with major depressive disorder where they're so locked into depression. And one person told me, it was like frightening for me to hear, but they said, my mind is such that I can't even produce a positive thought. I can't even produce it. You tell me, like, oh, get distracted with this or do that, I'm stuck with all negative thoughts and I can't get out. So it can get like that. We have to catch ourselves quickly. These instructions by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we're very, very humble, if we have spiritual truth in our hearts, when these things happen throughout the day, throughout our lives, you stay humble, stay tolerant. See if you can let it go. Krishna can help you, especially when we combine this practice with the chanting of the holy name. Because that's when the real grace comes to overcome everything. So, Amani means this identity that we want to renounce. All these designations, because when you have a designation and you're very attached to it, I'm a man, I'm this race, this is what I do for a living, so this is what I am. I'm a father, I'm a mother, whatever it may be. If you feel that designation too strongly, then you become entitled to certain things. Well, I'm this, so I should be like this, and others should be like this to me. It's connected to the identity, how strongly we're holding on to a false identity. And then you start to feel a certain way and think a certain way because of that I am, fill in the blank. I am that. So if you insult me, well, and then we put heavy expectations on ourselves. I am this, so I have to behave in this way. But if we can let go of those designations and think, I am just the eternal servant of Krishna. We might think, if I go there, then how will I do all these other responsibilities? I'm also a father, I'm also a husband, I'm also a chaplain, but shouldn't I be taking ownership of those things? But in all those relationships, if I think I am the eternal servant of Krishna, you will do everything right. If I'm at work and I'm thinking, when I go visit someone as a chaplain, if I just think, forget the chaplain, I'm doing this as service to Krishna. Let me be, Krishna, please show me how to serve in this circumstance. I'm your servant. I'm with my wife, and if I start thinking I'm the husband, but actually, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna has given me this person. How can I serve? How best to serve now? So all those designations, don't worry about it. You can let them go. And if you take hold very strongly of this one designation, the true designation, I'm eternal servant of Krishna, then Krishna will give the intelligence of what to do and how to do it, everything perfectly. So I'll stop here. There's just a few minutes left. Just pointing out here, just to summarize, this verse, Bhagavans Tat Viditsati, if you remember something, remember this part of the verse, the last line of the verse, which is Lord Brahma saying, this has been ordained by God, so do not fear, do not worry, do not think too much upon it, because it's been ordained by God. So that understanding, combined with responding to life with humility, tolerance, offering respects to others according to their position, and expecting nothing in return, and chanting the holy name. So this is the path of bhakti. So we'll stop here. Any thoughts, comments, reflections, questions?
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for a thought-provoking class. So the four things are, the first one is humbler than a Veda class, mm-hmm. tolerance, a false ego, and the fourth one was offering respects?
Yes, I didn't get to that one a little bit more in detail, but the next one is offering respects. And what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, because you see that every living being is resting within Krishna, and also Krishna is resting within every living being. Understanding that and seeing that, you offer respects to all. And it may take a different form. You don't have to be respectful in the same way to everyone. Sometimes you may even have to avoid someone respectfully. But you still understand Krishna's in their heart. They are within Krishna also.
How do you preach to people in the psycho war then, when they're so mentally locked in? How is there a way to break that up?
You know, you can speak more directly, I find, with people in psychiatric, because they've hit such a hard place in life that sometimes, you know, first of all, just going to see them and spend time is helpful, because it's very lonely, and they're also sometimes very lonely in their minds, and also even externally. You can imagine if you have some mental issue, then people actually avoid you. So you just go and show up. If you go and show up again and again, that itself is giving them some faith that there's some goodness. That's preaching. That's one thing. But also you can speak directly about God to such people. You know, you have to take shelter of God. This is really the only way. You know, you can be very direct. My experience has been. You have to look at each person in particular. You can't make it a generalization. But often, people are in that situation, they're open to such direct preaching also.
I had a friend once, and she had a divorce. She was divorced, and she was so disturbed. All she could think of was revenge the husband, because she felt she was wronged.
Yeah.
And she kept asking me, what should I do? What should I do? And so I gave her a picture of Krishna's lotus feet. And I said, every time you think of revenge, just look at this lotus feet and think how I can serve this person. Mm. And I saw her later, and she said, that really worked. Every time I'm disturbed now, I think of Krishna's lotus feet. So anyhow, I think that was Krishna inspiring me. But that could be a very, very heavy situation.
That's
somebody's
beautiful.
Mind is so... fix on something that's really, you know, they can't get out from, you know, especially if they feel they've been wronged, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very painful sometimes. But we have to take shelter somewhere. We take shelter in those thoughts, that's the problem, instead of taking shelter of a place where we can actually get purified. Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu. An event may happen, or even a long time taking, and it's natural to think, okay, what's the lesson I'm supposed to learn here? And if I learn the lesson, then the event, the ongoing thing may come to an end. But you're saying, just see it as Krishna's doing, don't worry. But there's the worry that when will I learn the lesson, or what is the lesson, because it's still going on. Mm. Is this proper thinking, or what?
We should be eager to see what the lesson is, but we shouldn't get preoccupied with that also.
Uh-huh.
Those are more thoughts provided by the material energy. You know, to kind of, again, trap. It's another kind of trap. If you get, well, when will it happen? Well, when will it happen? I've done so long. And it actually, subtly, some resentment may be coming in from those repeated. So you just keep your eyes open and you're just vigilant. Krishna, you can say it in a moment. Krishna, show me. How do I, what is it? But then, you know, it's not like you're occupied day and night thinking about it. Oh my God, it's been 6 years, I haven't learned the lesson. You may have even learned it, but your mind is telling you you haven't. This is how tricky the mind is. That's why you have, when the thoughts come up, you have to just let them go and doubt them. Just live here now. Krishna, show me. That's enough. And now go forward. And maybe things are being revealed to you. But if we're stuck in these thoughts, then even Krishna's message can't get through because the mind is so clouded with repetitive thoughts. So even that, we have to be a little careful. But it can be said, and then we clear our minds and wait. Krishna, whenever you're ready to reveal, I have to be very awake and vigilant to receive it. And when you're ready, please allow me to see it, accept it. Jai, Prangovin Prabhu.
I was contemplating which one to mention. It's a very nice class. Few things. If tree was not covered conscious body, I wonder if tree would really act the way Mahaprabhu said it. Honestly.
Yeah.
Tree tolerating, you emphasize very nicely, but if tree did not have a covered consciousness, he would have a blooming consciousness, I think tree would run away if there is a hot sun.
Yes. Yes, we are that tree without being covered. We're the proof of that.
Okay. So my dilemma is, am I actually making my destiny, or it is predestined that I'm facing and I have to learn the lesson from that? If we look at from both sides, like an example, Draupadi was humiliated. Is that Krishna wanted to punish all those 640 million people, according to Prabhupada, 640 million people, that he wanted to really finish them, annihilate them, that this whole scenario took place? Or actually Duryodhan planned for it? Krishna sanctioned it but not approved it. Because sanctioning is like a, because he's a, I mean, I thought many times that he is guilty of two things, could be more. One guilty is that Draupadi is very honorable, very highly respected, chaste lady, to defame in a big assembly of royal king, princes. It's really disgrace, Duryodhana's thought. And he never felt guilty about this. And second is, he never regretted that he did wrong. So from that angle, whoever supported Duryodhana, they should be literally wiped out. From that sense, okay, Krishna is right. But then when Draupadi was praying and Krishna appeared as a unlimited clothes, that was not a sanction, it was approved by the Lord. Because sanction, even a stubborn soul can ask for something to destroy or do harm to others. Krishna, well, nothing, without sanction, nothing acts. Upadrashta anumanta, anumanta, the word anumanta means he has to permit. Without his, Prabhupada said, blade of a grass doesn't move without his sanction. But approve, that where Krishna stand behind, sanction, he doesn't stand behind. I want you to just give me a little elaborate on that.
Yeah, if we even look at this pastime, many things are happening at the same time. This is Krishna's mystic opulence. You know, so the four Kumaras cursed Jaya and Vijaya. You could think, maybe this is inappropriate. Four Kumaras are also sages. How could they do it? So they did it. Huh? And there's some reaction to it all. Jaya Vijaya, they also stopped them. Maybe this was inappropriate. They're also something happening because of their action. That's what Lord Narayan says. They have done wrong. But then we also know that all of this is happening, as it's described in this purport, Krishna wants to fight. He has his own personal wish. And somehow he has his own desire. He's also harmonizing with the four Kumaras. Whatever they do, there's also some reaction. Jai Vijay, also some reaction. All of these things simultaneously are manifesting. So it kind of blows the mind to think about it that way. It leaves us a little bit stunned and it maybe doesn't feel like much of an answer. But it's always like this. Even the sanction of the Lord, you know, like his mercy is contained even in a sanction. We can do something terrible to somebody and some reaction comes. Krishna sanctioned that now I'm punished in that way. But that reaction also is something to change me. If I can get that understanding. Sometimes it breaks me down so I have to break down so far where I finally become desperate and just turn my eyes up to God. Look at this situation I'm in. So there's his will, his direct personal will to do something for a certain reason, right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came, he also had his own reason for coming. Actually, that's the supreme reason, is his reason. It wasn't to give compassion to all living beings. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his will, his reason for coming was for his own reason. And as devotees, we should think, wonderful, that is your will? Then I fully think that is wonderful, that you've come for your own reason, to taste the love of your devotee. But simultaneously, it is for the compassion of all living beings. We're recipients of that, we're grateful. And then, you know, there are different people are responding to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy in different ways. Some accept it. Some are averse and are running away from it. And there's some reaction that comes. But that also is helping to realign them. So my point is, all of the above, you know? We have some decision we make, some reaction is coming, sanctioned. There's also mercy in it. There's also God's reason for doing it. This is how I understand it. This pastime actually shows it in that way. Krishna has his own will. He also, just his desire is just vira rasa, to come and fight. And if he's going to fight anybody, who does he only interacts with his devotees, so he has to fight his devotees. So he allowed this to happen, his will is fulfilled, but also everybody involved are getting also reactions and are connected in that way. So very mysterious, but that's the best I can understand it. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. So we're in a purificatory process. So purification is not always going to look materially. It's not going to look or feel comfortable. So when devotees are going through purification, you know, if we felt like we had a platform where others could see it as that and say, Jai, you know, Krishna's purifying you. You're one step closer, you know, to die before you die kind of scenario, right?
So we have to see if that's the truth ultimately. We have to see how much a person is able to receive that in the moment or maybe after some time, but that is the real way of getting purified is in what's happening, remembering Krishna, that Krishna is actually behind this. It's that remembrance of Krishna. This is the criteria of, you know, what is the sum and substance of all the rules and regulations is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. So in those moments, Krishna's doing something. There's an opportunity here. And just by remembering Krishna, the purification actually takes place. If we take that part out and just try to figure it out and we're suffering through it, we can sometimes modify what we're feeling, but we're actually not getting purified. Because Krishna is what purifies. So that is the most essential focus at a time when we're going through something. And it may be difficult and take time. Devotees can help us, as you're saying. Okay, Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.